Welcome to the Business and Enterprise Systems Mission Success Podcast, where we give you a look into things happening at BES and other topics of interest. As we prepare for the holidays, we could think of no better guest than our guest today. She's the chief of the program execution group, Ms. Marcy Rhodes. Ms. Rhodes, good day to you. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks, John. Thank you. I appreciate this.
Hey, we are excited to have you and just always look forward to talking to you around the office. As we get into this, you've been in civil service now for over 30 years. So tell us about your journey, some of the roles that you've had along the way, and then specifically how you came into BES and what roles you've had in this organization.
Okay. Well, hey, thanks again. Thank you for the opportunity. It's been a real pleasure. What's interesting is I was at Gunter as a military dependent. My dad was stationed at Gunter. Actually a month ago, I hit 35 years of service. So I came into the internship program, but I didn't come in at Gunter. So the Air Force had an internship program, but they didn't have it here. So I actually had to PCS and went to Pratt & Whitney in East Hartford, Connecticut. And started out as a copper cap, which is really a Palace Acquire intern, but it's for the contract and career field. And so I came in as a price analyst negotiator for the government on site at Pratt & Whitney, and kind of got my feet wet, didn't know anything about contracting, any of the things, which was really great. Kind of learned that, had some great folks that I worked with up there, did about 6-7 months, and then I transferred to Eglin Air Force Base, Florida, and that really opened up some opportunities for me. If I had stayed in Connecticut, I would have been a contract specialist for 3 years, just doing solely the parts, the aircraft parts. Going to Eglin allowed me to do weapons, munitions, that type of work, and working at different levels from ordering supplies to services, and then moving all the way up to R&D, kind of doing some research and development work, and then the major weapon systems. And that was around the time of the Gulf War when that started coming out in the early 90s. So being able to move around and see it at the different complexity levels as a contract specialist was really great. So I finished up that program in 3 years, and I actually got back to Gunner because AFPC, that runs the internship program, called me and said, hey, we really need some contract specialists in Montgomery, and we also know you have family. My parents retired here in Montgomery. And so I came back 3 years to the day, really, or to the month of coming in the program, and I've been at Gunner ever since. It's been tremendous. I've moved around and worked in the space of logistics. I've worked a lot of the force protection, the DCAPES program. When we brought that down about 20 years ago, I was deputy PM for that. I worked the civil engineering, had the branch at civil engineering, in the space that's now GBB, where we have the medical systems, arms, all of that. I had been a branch and then moved up to the deputy division level there for a number of years. And then we kind of pulled out the financial systems that was in there and merged it with Deems back in 2018. And so I kind of had that hub as well. So I've basically worked in every space that BES, as we know today, has been, except for the piece I've worked, I've collaborated with NetSense, all of the Microsoft and the Oracle licenses. I've worked with them, but that's the one piece at Gunner I have not worked in. And it's been a tremendous opportunity to kind of move around and do it. And I blink and can't believe it. I've hit the 35 years doing that. And what I did in the middle of that was I moved over. So I did 10 years contracting, but then I moved over and started the acquisition program management. So I've got 25 years now in acquisition program management.
Wow. Okay. What a journey. I didn't know all of that myself. That's good. So you're the chief of the program execution group. What is that? Tell us how that group supports all of BES.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you for asking. So the program execution group which I'm like a lot of our professionals that are in there now, we've all kind of been out in portfolios working the execution arm of things. And I really didn't know everything that the PEG did for the organization until I was selected almost 3 years ago to come over and lead it. So a lot of the things that we do, we run down a lot of the policies that come out from DOD, Air Force, down through the MAGCOM, AFMC, down to the center, make sure that we get that out. Our biggest thing is being kind of that source of making sure that folks know what the policies, what the regulations are, and being that sounding board as we have a lot of our programs going through the acquisition process. And so we also have folks inside our PEG that are acquisition specialists, but they are assigned to each portfolio. So they are in the trenches there. They're taking the meetings, the different acquisition decision meetings with our leaders, with the MDAs, that type of thing. And so that's a part. We've got a lot of different parts. We work directly for Mr. Burse, our new PEO. And so we are the hands-on for DV visits, distinguished visitor visits. We make sure that we've got him prepped and ready to go up when he meets with other leaders at the SAF AQ level. I work a lot with SAF AQ, SAF CN, that does a lot of our policy, Klinger-Cohen Act, that type of stuff. So we are involved with that part of it. Another piece of what we do, and it used to be, it's kind of evolved over the years, but we have it in the PEG, is when we have new work. If there's new work that someone's wanting to come in and bring, that comes through us, we follow the process that goes through SAF AQ on how to bring it in, where we actually do an assessment and we look and say, yeah, if you're going to bring it, we're the right PEO, we're the right fit. And so there's a process, and we have some folks that work with us inside the PEG that will guide you through that process. So we do protocol. We've kind of been the de facto protocol, which has been great. A lot of the other services we get from the host organization, which is Maxwell. But we have, since everybody is kind of coming back to the base, we've been pretty busy with that. We just had our new LCMC engineer director here for a visit yesterday. And so we had some folks plugged in, and your lead there, Stratcom, there was involved in that too. So we've got a lot of things. One of the areas I think a lot of folks don't know, which is new since I've come to the PEG, is we have an enterprise program management function. And that means that there's a requirement and it spans more than one portfolio, one division. We get involved because we want to do it at that strategic enterprise level. And so now that's another part of the organization piece that we do here in the PEG.
So really, you're leading the hub of all the divisions. So much comes in and out through the PEG for each division.
Yeah, yes, sir. Yeah, and I will say too, of course, we do have the suspenses. We keep up with the formal ones that come through, the internal ones, local, and the ones that come at the higher level, the higher headquarters. So we try to manage that. We do as much as we can, that if we've got that information in the PEG, we try to get those answered instead of always pushing. Our goal is to always try to minimize what we have to push out to those portfolios because they are doing the day-to-day operational work. And so we reach out when we have to, but we really do fold in and do about a third of it. About a third of what comes in, we're able to retain and get answered on behalf of the PEO and deputy PEO from the PEG.
So I'm an admirer and a student of leadership. And I remember recently you were in a meeting and you shared about how your background role has always been more about leadership and not necessarily the technical side. But I also heard you say you're always paying attention and you mentioned different leaders that you're always learning from in those meetings. So what are some of the things that you feel like you've learned on the technical side and other ways that you may be growing as a leader?
When I had made that statement, I was kind of looking at it from a standpoint of being in a portfolio where you were sitting in a lot of integrated product teams, IPTs, where you're bringing in your engineers, your logisticians, contracting, your FM, community, config management, because you all work together. That synergy's got to be there. But what I was always impressed with, and I'll take example, DCAPES. We brought DCAPES down here from Hanscom 20 years ago. We had so many meetings on what we needed to do for the program to move it forward with the software and the IT capabilities. But I started understanding, I started respecting what that role was. And I would say what helped me grow as a program manager was kind of understanding enough, you know, maybe more in layman's terms when they start getting deep and the OV1s and SV1s and beyond. A lot of that's over me, but I really appreciated when I could walk out and I understood a conversation that engineers were having about what we were trying to do for our system. And so I think that's key. I think that's really, that has helped me grow so that I understand, at least I know now kind of what questions to ask. Mm-hmm. And I manage the Palace Acquire program management program here at Gunter for Mr. Burse. And that's one thing I'm always telling the interns, there's never a bad time to jump into our world and what we do because it's changing all the time. You can have folks that have 30, 40 years and you can have somebody brand new in the door and we're probably all learning something new because things just evolve that quickly. So never be afraid to ask questions so that you understand and not only understand what they're doing, but how you fit in that equation. You always want to know, and I'm always wanting folks to understand how you contribute. You know, what role do you have and how do you contribute to it? So when I talk about the technical, it's understanding all of it. And I do that actually with the PACs that are here, the interns. We try to give them a little rotation in contracting, a little bit in the FM world, because those are those specialists that they're going to have to work with as they get elevated as program managers. It's more of an appreciation.
Good. And we just talked about the PEG being the hub. We talked about this now of how you want to be able to speak the language of all the people that you're dealing with. So the PEG is not just a liaison, but there's really a lot going on as far as keeping such synergy with all of the different divisions. So what are some of the challenges you run into with that? And what are some of the rewards that you get out of this?
I would say it's a challenge, but it's a good challenge because it stretches us. We're such a small group that each of our specialists in the PEG know their job as a primary and they're an alternate in some other area, right? Because we want to be process-driven and not people-driven when folks need to take leave or be away. But I would say the biggest challenge that I challenge my team every day is what other avenues can we use to communicate? Making sure we're getting this information in from the higher headquarters or what the intent is, the director's intent or commander's intent of Mr. Burse and Colonel Bustelo, but how do we communicate that so that what we know is filtered down, not just at the portfolio or division leader, but all the way down to the folks that are doing the program management day to day. And so we're always trying to find different avenues. We have done the chat and choose. That's one way over the years we pick certain things, and it's not just us, but we facilitate that. And I know that GBQ has done a lot of things about the tools that they offer to get things out. We give a platform for them to get that word out. We've got the pegagrams. When we're finding out new guidance or links of things that we want to share with folks, that's always what we want to do. We want to continue to find a way to communicate and over-communicate what folks have at their fingertips. And I've actually done that as kind of a PEG call. I've done it with a couple of divisions. I'm going to do it again. We've got some new leaders and I want to get that in. But we kind of run through, here's what we have. I don't know if you know, but these are all the services that we provide to you. And that's really gone a long way. I did it with a couple of new leaders. And then they turned and said, hey, I think the rest of my division needs to know that. And so we've done a couple of those. And I have actually offered that to some of the other new leaders that have come in, that at any time when they're having an all-call you know, I'm glad to come in and give an abbreviated version of this is what we do, because I really learned a lot. And I think that's, I learned a lot of things that PEG was doing. I didn't know because it never filtered down to where I was in the division.
Right. So as a leader, you're leading all of this, you're leading these different elements of the PEG and interacting with other leaders. You just mentioned you're always trying to grow. But what are some things, who are some people over the course of your career, over 30 years now, who have impacted you? Who are the people? What are the events that have just made you a better leader today?
Gosh, there's a few. There's some former leaders, supervisors that I've had that I still keep in touch with, that's helped mold my relationship. But the whole person, I would say it's my parents, and I would say specifically it's my dad. And I say that because dad has worked in this space, the IT space. And so it's more than just on the personal side of growth, but on the professional, because he understands kind of the language that we've had. And he's kind of been out of this area for about 20 years or so, but he's still plugged in with a lot of some of the folks that have worked here in BES over the years. So I would say one thing that I really love about it is data points. There's certain times throughout, especially since college and beyond, and then starting my career. But my dad has always been the one that said, did you ever imagine, you know, wherever I was at that point in my career, did you ever imagine that you would be in that spot or that opportunity, you know, that opportunity to move and to grow and to hopefully have a positive impact on folks? And it is, because it's a reflection. It's a reflective moment for me to stop and pause and think about, where am I? Not just what I'm doing, but what am I doing to help level set and get that next generation ready? And I think that's been impactful for me. So I would say my dad, first and foremost.
Wow. That's I've heard you talk about your dad before, and still, your parents are still here in Montgomery.
Yes.
So it's great that you still, I just say this from a personal standpoint, to be able to, for him to see his influence on you, I'm sure makes him very proud of the dad. So.
Yeah. Yeah. He's great. They're both great. They really are.
Well, I want to move into something. We haven't done this before on the podcast, but because it is the holiday season, it's time. We're going to get into some holiday questions, but one of those, what are some traditions that you may have that you're looking forward to this time of year with your family?
Yeah, I love Christmas. I love it. And I think that was, that really came from my own childhood, you know, that time with my family, to spend it. And I cherish that. So, my children are young adults now. I think this might be more me than them. But there's just little things that we've done that we've incorporated as a family. You know, putting out the stockings. I was sharing with you earlier, I've got some personalized cups that I had made when my sons were really little. And I get those out and decorate them. And you know, it's probably more for decoration now than anything. But we used to do that and do the hot cocoa and with cinnamon and that type of thing. And, you know, probably a lot of folks think it's kind of mushy, but the Christmas movies and just that holiday time of being together is really what I want to, you know, continue to do with them. I think the one thing, and I've just really stopped in the last, probably this past Christmas, is the ornaments. That was always a tradition with my kids. We, you know, we let them select them, and we did that every year. And I think we kind of put a pause on it because we've gotten now where I can't even put them all on the tree now that we've had them over the years. But I love that. I let them do it because there's a story behind what they picked. I let them select them. And so that's been a tradition in my family that we've done over the years.
That's awesome.
And the Christmas cards, the personal Christmas cards that we have done since they were little. And I had one year, I will tell you, I had one year that I didn't. I just ran out of time and I just got the regular box cards or whatever. And I had a cousin that called me that said, what are you doing? Where's my card? Because that's their way of seeing. Of course, now we've got Facebook and everything. But before that, you know, she said, that's my way of seeing the kids growing.
Yeah.
And so I resumed the next year and I've been doing it ever since. So that's another big, big tradition. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been meaning to tell you since last Christmas. Thank you for the Christmas cards.
Yes, sir. You're welcome.
First ever on the BES podcast, we're going to do rapid fire holiday questions.
Okay.
All right. So, are you an early bird or a last minute Christmas shopper?
Wow. I guess describe last minute.
Christmas Eve.
No, I'm not. I was going to say, I would consider that last minute. I worked in retail in college, and I had people that were, we were shutting the lights off in the department store, and people were trying to buy stuff. I am not that shopper. I'm early, kind of, you know, early, maybe a few weeks out. I might be finishing up, like maybe about now doing that. I've got one of my son's birthday is really the week before Christmas, so I try to get a little of it done. So yeah, and then I try to do not so much the item, but trying to incorporate service, you know, what this time of year is really about. And so it's not a lot of times it's not the shopping, but it's the experiences and reaching out and you know, doing things in the community during this time of year.
Wow, that's great. All right, so if your Christmas gift was an all-expense-paid vacation anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Gosh, can I pick two? Real quick, I guess it's rapid fire. I'd say Australia.
Okay.
Would love to do that. And Africa. Okay. I would really love to go Robben Island to take in some of the sites. Nelson Mandela, in fact, I think we just had the 10th anniversary of his passing. The past couple of days, but Africa for sure.
Okay, so are you a history buff? Is that,
huh?
Are you a history buff? Is that kind of what you're saying here?
I think I've grown into one. I didn't so-called like history. Maybe as I've gotten older, I really relish history. I've gotten more interested in that. Yeah.
All right. Are you dreaming of a white Christmas or an Alabama Christmas where everybody is in shorts and air conditioning?
White Christmas. We don't get many of those around here. It would be nice to have. That's a novelty. It would be nice to have a white Christmas.
Yeah. We've heard about it in the song. I want to see it actually happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. What is your proudest accomplishment?
I would say being able to have a rewarding career and raise a family and not, you know, not thinking I have to choose one or the other.
Yeah.
I think that's been really it. I've been really proud of that. I think it's not just me. I don't want to say it's all on me. It's on family. You know, having that support. My husband's been a tremendous support when I've had to move around with different jobs and with the kids. But now that we've kind of raised, right, we've raised responsible humans. And you can see them and they get to see now, you know, the work. I'm not sure if they fully understand everything I do, but being able to balance that and feel satisfied that you've done a good job, I think that's really been probably the proudest.
That's great. That's great. I actually was thinking about that, about how have you been able to all these years been able to balance family and your job, but it's great to hear you have a supportive family and a supportive.
Yeah, great support. Like I said, my folks are here. So when my kids were younger, and a lot of folks don't have it, when we're talking to our, not just the military, but even on the civilian, a lot of folks are away from family. And that's been really good to kind of have that. But putting first, the mission is very important. It's extremely important. But being able to delegate what you can so that you can move. I've been in that season when, you know, I've got to leave an hour early because my youngest was in Little League and, you know, his game was at 4 p.m. And, you know, you blink and you know, they're out on their own and driving themselves and stuff, but being able to balance that and just knowing when it's time to shift. And I will say, I could not do that on my own. Having tremendous leaders, bosses that understood that, I think that was really key. I was really blessed along the way that I had some that understood. They already had their families a lot of times, or they were kind of in that season as well. And they understood. I didn't have any problems when I needed to be off to do that and support, you know, to chaperone a field trip or go to a baseball or basketball game.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. One last question.
Okay.
What is one thing you're deeply grateful for right now?
I'm grateful for good health, and I'm grateful that I'm here where my folks are. As they get older, they're in their mid-80s. They're relatively fine, but I'm grateful for that. And I don't feel stagnant. You know, I'm grateful that I've moved around and had a lot of experiences in BES, fulfilling, challenging me, which I really love, but I was able to do it here. I didn't have to sacrifice that. And being here now that they're older and I have siblings that live out of state, I'm very grateful that I get to do this here.
That's great. That's great. And we are grateful for you. Like I said at the top of the episode, you're a great leader, well-rounded. You just really make it a joy for those of us who work with you every day. And I just personally say thank you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that so much. You guys make it so fun. We have a great team, and we couldn't do the things. I couldn't do what I do without that whole team that just, you know, they bring a wealth of knowledge, their own perspective and experiences. And that's what it's all about. And I don't take any of that for granted. There's always something to learn from everyone. You know, whether you're a seasoned pro in this or you're new, it is enlightening. And I do want to add, we had an opportunity to get our interns for a lunch with the PEO. And I had always not stayed in that. I've always kind of stepped out and let them have it. Our schedule moved around, and so I had a large piece of it that I was there with. And it's tremendous. We have an exceptional group, not just in PM, but across the space there with our engineers in cyber. And I'm just grateful for learning so much from the folks that are new in this area.
Awesome. Well, Ms. Rhodes, thank you for being a part of the podcast today. And I know I'll see you in the coming days, but I just want to wish you and your family just an amazing holiday season. I hope you enjoy all the things we talked about earlier, the traditions and the good times together. So for all of you, thank you for tuning in to the BES Mission Success Podcast. At BES, we run the systems that run the Air Force, moving money, manpower, and materiel. Until next time, happy holidays.